Walls, you just kind of blended in. I didn't notice you when I first came in. I'm sorry.
It's camouflage.
Chalte, septique. It's camouflage, yeah. Okay. Huh?
Saffron chemical.
Yeah, saffron chemical. He's kind of like got an Indian saffron. This is like a Rite Aid saffron. It's more the Indian color, but it merges with the walls. I mean, it blends with the walls. Like that one, huh?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. We're. How many of you are here today for the first time? Okay. Well, get out of here. I want to welcome you.
And.
Okay. Okay. We're going to have a little. Reading philosophy discussion from the Bhagavad Gita, and then we may have a little more mantra meditation or sankirtan, and then we'll have a nice repast, the Last Supper on Friday night, and we're going to have a nice vegetarian feast. So, we hope everybody has a good time. But first, we have some invocation into the Bhagavad Gita. And what happens is somebody gives me a pair of kartals and we start chanting. Oh, yeah. You can get me. Nowadays, the popular thing is to have in movies animated animals like pigs and frogs and this and that. So in our kirtan, we're going to do that too. If I sound a little bit like a frog, I'm not known as a good singer, so please excuse me. But this is a very sweet prayer. It would be a really great idea if you could turn maybe a few degrees so you didn't have your back to rub. That's okay. We're speaking today from Bhagavad Gita as it is, with translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Chapter 6, entitled Dhyana Yoga, text number 13 through... Let's go all the way to 17. This is on page 320, starting. Do we chant the verses?
Yeah, we can.
No, we can't. I think it would be a little too much.
No, it's up to you. Sometimes it is.
No, we got three or four verses to read. Okay, well. We'll just chant them all together. It'll be a cacophony, epiphany of sound and, you know, and all that. So we'll start with verse 13. Samam kaya shiro grivam.
Samam kaya shiro grivam.
Dharayan achalan stida.
Dharayan achalan stida.
Sampreksha nasika gram swam.
Sampreksha nasika gram swam.
Dishas chana valokayan.
Dishas chana valokayan.
Prashantatma vigata bir. Brahmachari vrate stita.
Brahmachari vrate stita.
Mana samyamyam achitto.
Mana samyamyam achitto.
Yukta asita matparaha.
Yukta asita matparaha.
Translation. One should hold one's body, neck, and head erect in a straight line and stare steadily at the tip of the nose. Thus, with an unagitated, subdued mind, devoid of fear, completely free from sex life, one should meditate upon me within the heart and make me the ultimate goal of life. Everyone can repeat responsively. One should hold one's body, neck, and head
erect in a straight line and stare steadily at the tip of the nose. Thus, with an unagitated, subdued mind, devoid of fear, completely free from sex life, one should meditate upon me within the heart and make me the ultimate goal of life.
Well, that was really nice, although it's not responsibly, but still it was cool. It turned out better than I planned.
We don't need you now.
Yeah, yeah. I'll just go where the prasadam is. Okay. Fair part. Thanks, Srila Prabhupada.
We do need you. We really do.
Please say that, because I could go. The goal of life is to know Krishna, who is situated within the heart of every living being as Paramatma, the four-handed Vishnu form. The yoga process is practiced in order to discover and see this localized form of Vishnu, and not for any other purpose. The localized Vishnu Murti is the plenary representation of Krishna dwelling within one's heart. I think we have Vishnu here. Where's the original? No.
No, we don't have
it. Okay. Anyway, we certainly have. Oh, there's Vishnu. That's right. There you go. Narayan, or Vishnu. The same form of the Lord, Vishnu, Narayan, is existing within the heart of every living being as the soul of all souls. Is directing the wanderings of all living beings throughout the cosmic creation. And although we're looking for friendship, we're looking for love, we're looking for guidance, knowledge, but we're looking ephemerally. And that's not effeminately, it's ephemerally. We're looking outside in the phenomenal world. And this is a mistake, because actually our very best friend is right within our own heart. There are two souls. There's the individual soul, the person who is looking out from the eyes, the witnessing, experiencing person, who identifies himself as I within the mind. We hear people a lot of times in who are connected with some self-help organization or some psychologist or psychiatrist or whatever, and what everybody's saying is, I have to get in touch with my real self. And what they're thinking, they're still thinking on the physical plane as if the real self is not really a doctor. The real self is a lawyer. So, you know, as soon as I discover that I'm a lawyer, then I'll be happy. Good luck. But it's much, much deeper than that. The real self is Aja, unborn. Nitya, eternal. Ajo Nitya Shasvatam Yam Purano Nahanyate Hanyamane Sharire. The real self doesn't die when the body is dissolved or annihilated or dies. The real self is hankering after a relationship with the Supreme Person, the Supreme Self. And this is the trick of illusion of the material world. Although we're looking for that supreme relationship with that supreme person, we're looking in the wrong place because, you know, the hardest thing to see on your body, who knows what the hardest thing to see in your body is? Well, apart from your back. It's your nose. It's right on your forehead, right in front of you. The hardest thing to see is that Supersoul is there within us, our dearmost friend. He's the same Ishwara, the same controller, Ishwara Paramakrishna. Not a blade of grass moves without his sanction. He's controlling all the universes. He's controlling gravity. He's controlling... He is time. Controls time. He is time. And yet he makes himself available. Have you ever worked for someone who just didn't have time for you, who was so busy, couldn't give you a few minutes to talk, or been involved in a relationship where, you know, you never seem to have time to meet the other person or talk or be intimate or whatever? Krishna is a person who does everything and yet has all the time in the universe for you. And not only for you, for me too. That's the beauty of Krishna. He can be with all of us individually. He's there in our heart. And the goal of yoga is to help us get in touch with that person. Yoga is the matchmaker, you can say. Yoga is the science of self-realization, self-awakening. And of course the basis of that is aham brahmasmi, or I am not the body. One who has no program to realize this Vishnu Murti is uselessly engaged in mock yoga practice and is certainly wasting his time. Krishna is the ultimate goal of life, and the Vishnu Murti situated in one's heart is the object of yoga practice. So people do talk about yoga. In fact, right, not more than a few hundred yards from this place, there's a yoga class going on, and more or less people think that yoga is either a means to lose weight so that you can have a healthy sex life, or it's a way, if you're really spiritual, it's a way to commit suicide, a spiritual suicide. In other words, to merge with Brahman, to lose all individuality, all sentiality. Is that a word, sentiality? Sentience, sentious. It works. It's American. Okay, sentiality. all sense of senses. And just merge. And people think that's the goal of yoga, yoga practice. And there are two things here. One is they're wrong about the goal, and two is they're wrong about the practice, because real yoga is ashtanga, ashtanga yoga. It starts with yam niyam, which means one must be a strict vegetarian, one must practice celibacy. It is said that the yogi, if he loses one drop of vital fluid, can't attain perfection in this lifetime, because he's lost so much energy just in that the power needed to attain perfection in yoga, the heat that is generated when he leaves his body is so intense, the body burns up in a fire as he leaves the Brahmarandra chakra. So one has to practically be a lifelong celibate, and one has to yam niyam, asana, one has to practice hatha yoga, they call it, asana yoga, sitting postures. But the goal is not sitting postures. Sitting postures are just to help you so that you can breathe properly. And then there's pranayama. Now that's the beginning stage of yoga, pranayama. And the others are just preliminary practices. Then there's pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, and samadhi. So, dhyana vastita tadgatena manasa pasyanti yam yoginaha. In the Vedas it is stated that the goal of yoga is to focus the mind and senses and everything on the Supreme Person. To realize this Vishnumurti in one's heart is the object of yoga practice. To realize this Vishnumurti within the heart, one has to observe complete abstinence from sex life. Therefore, one has to leave home and live alone in a secluded place, remaining seated as mentioned above. One cannot enjoy sex life daily at home or elsewhere and attend so-called yoga class and thus become a yogi. One has to practice controlling the mind and avoiding all kinds of sense gratification, of which sex life is the chief. This may not be a popular subject for people to discuss, because we're from the Dr. Spock generation. That's not Captain Spock, but it's Dr. Spock. And he's the one who told us, don't suppress anything. It's not good for you. And, you know, if it feels good, do it. And basically, the highest, it's a fact, the highest, the perverted form of loving ecstasy with God is sex life. They're completely juxtaposed or opposite, but one is the highest form of spiritual pleasure and the other is the highest form of material pleasure. And for some people it's disheartening to learn that they have to make a choice. They want both. They want their cake and they want to eat it too. So the real thing to try and understand here is that sex life, and there is pleasure in sex life, but there's a heavy downside. And that is that the mind becomes riveted into the body. And, it, you know, it's the old saying, if you pick up one end of the stick, you pick up the other end of the stick. If you want sense gratificatory pleasure, then you have to take sense pain, sukh and dukkh, happiness and distress, pain and pleasure, hot and cold, beginning and end. If you identify with the body, then you think you're a microphone or something. Oh, okay. Okay. So if you identify with the body, that's okay. You can, actually, you can enjoy. I remember once we were walking with Prabhupada in Los Angeles, and this was in 71, I think, on a morning walk, and there was a movie, maybe Dayananda remembers. It was the, this is weird. I remember it, but I never heard of it since then. There was a movie, Is There Sex Life After Death? Do you remember that? And Prabhupada saw that billboard, that hoarding. A billboard? What do you call it here? You call it billboard. In India, we call it hoarding. Prabhupada said, you tell them, yes, there is. but not as they know it. And even in this life, Dharma Viruddha Bhuteshu Kamosmi Bharatarshava, when it is done for the creation of good progeny, then it is religious and it can be a source of a devotional service to Krishna. And you know, one gratifies his senses without committing sin, and one can gradually get free from the bodily conception altogether and go back to the spiritual world. So it's a big subject, and we should understand it, you know, call things for what they are. Obviously, there's a lot of downsides here. Licentiousness leads to decadence, and it leads to a lot of other anomalies in civilization. It leads to Varna Shankara, just to start with, unwanted progeny. And, you know, I tell this story a lot because it struck me so heavily about the young lady, debutante in heiress in England, a beautiful young girl. Her father was an earl, and her mother was a, I don't know, duchess. What's the opposite of an earl? Duke and duchess. I don't know, an earl and earless. But anyway, earless. Anyway, she was heiress to a huge fortune, position, everything, but she was starved. Her parents were separated. She went to her father and said, Father, you know, please, I just want a little time. I want a little love from you. He said, look, don't bother me. You were born out of a bottle of whiskey on a Saturday night. So she didn't like that too much, and she committed suicide. You see that a lot. Dysfunctional families, because the emphasis is just on sex, and that's not what relationship is about. The real relationship is with God, and as friends or as associates or as whatever, children of God, we can help one another get back to our original position. And that's how we should see things, not, you know, not the way Madonna sees it. I heard she just became a Buddhist or something, or she had a Buddhist, I don't know. Because she's, one day she's a Hindu, next day she's a Buddhist. Got an imagination, that kid. And it's real superficial, too, because that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about spiritual life, not external, superficial flirtation with a particular religious affiliation. We're not talking about that. In the rules of celibacy written by the great sage Yajnavalkya, it is said, Karmana manasavacha sarva vastasu sarvada sarvatra Maituna Tyago Brahmacharyam Prachakshate. The vow of brahmacharya is meant to help one completely abstain from sex indulgence in work, words, and mind at all times, under all circumstances, and in all places. Well, there are eight kinds of sex life. There's the physical act, there's meditating on the physical act, there's meditating on the parts of the body of the opposite sex, there's meditating on the clothes, it's all part of the same direction of energy. No one can perform correct yoga practice through sex indulgence. Brahmacharya is taught, therefore, from childhood when one has no knowledge of sex life. Children at the age of 5 are sent to the Guru Kula, the school of the spiritual master, or the place of the spiritual master, and the master trains the young boys in the strict discipline of becoming brahmacharis. Without such practice, no one can make advancement in any yoga, whether it be dhyana, jnana, or bhakti. One who, however, follows the rules and regulations of married life, having a sexual relationship only with his wife, and that also under regulation, is also called a brahmachari, grihastha brahmachari. Such a restrained householder, brahmachari, may be accepted in the bhakti school, but the jnana and dhyana schools do not even admit householder brahmachari. Shankaracharya had his ashrams in the country, and you couldn't even go there unless you were had taken sannyas. There's no question of going there with your wife and children, etc. But that's not the teaching of Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna was, the highest knowledge was imparted to Arjuna. And he was a grihastha and actually had 4 wives. But he was a warrior, so that was allowed. But still, the point was he was a grihastha. And Krishna said that bhaktosi me sakacheti rahasyam hietad uttama. Your qualification, Arjuna, is that you are my sakha, my friend. You are my bhakta. You are my devotee. Therefore, I am imparting this most confidential knowledge to you because you're not envious of me. Anasuyave, you're not envious of me. Therefore, you can understand it. So again, it comes back to the same point. External show is not what we're looking for, external form. We're looking for the essential quality of someone who wants spiritual life and wants to have a deep relationship with God, so much that practically they're greedy about it. Lolyam, apiekalam mulyam. It's intense. It's powerful energy. Utsas, enthusiasm. And that quality is wanted. One has to be prepared to practice not one day a week for half an hour, but 24 hours a day. It has to be part of one's very being. One who, however, follows the rules and regulation, they require complete abstinence from or without compromise. In the bhakti school, a householder brahmachari is allowed controlled sex life because the cult of bhakti yoga is so powerful that one automatically loses sexual attraction. Being engaged in the superior service of the Lord, in the Bhagavad Gita, it is said, 259, Vishaya vinivartante niraharasya dehina rasavarjam rasopyasya param drishtva nivartate param drishtva. When you get a higher taste, and that taste comes through navavida bhakti, hearing, chanting, remembering, offering prayers, worshiping the lotus feet of the Lord, offering everything. From this type of lifestyle change comes jnana and vairagya. knowledge and detachment. And one can actually transcend the physical, the intense itches, the desires that drive us up a wall, the things that keep us running around in the material world, doing all kinds of stupid things that we regret later on and put us through so much pain and misery, but we can't do without it. Whatever it be. So many ambitions, so many desires. It starts from sex, but there's a whole plethora of extended desires. Lab, puja, and pratishta, profit, adoration, and distinction. And these things, dushprena, analena, cha, they're burning inside us, but they're never satiated. They're never, the fire is never put out. And you try to put out the fire by indulging in sense gratification. It's like pouring petrol on a fire, and I sure hope this will go out. I'll put a little petrol on it, and the fire just grows bigger. So we have to, you know, pull on the reins a little bit. Whoa, let me slow down. Let me take a look at the world. Where am I going? What's my purpose? And then we have to get some guidance from great literatures, great teachers, devotees. And then when we practice, we will experience this higher taste. And if supposing, you know, you're in a forest, you got lost or something, and you're there for, you know, like 17 days, and you got no food and a little bit of water, and you start to eat things, you know, that you wouldn't normally eat, like leaves and maybe some, you know, I don't know, insects or anything that gives you a little protein to keep you going. I mean, they teach the Marines. They teach groups that are caught in behind enemy lines. You were never in behind enemy lines, were you? Marine. But they teach them how to exist when they're out in the wilderness and they have nothing. And, you know, you got to eat certain things to survive. But then you get rescued and they offer you a nice gulab jamun from Ganga Rams or from Krishna's kitchen, and you easily give up the abominable things because you got a higher taste. You naturally give up the lower taste, and there is a higher taste than that few minutes of skin rubbing. There's a higher taste, but you have to work for it. Whereas others are forced to restrain themselves from sense gratification, a devotee of the Lord automatically refrains because of superior taste. Other than the devotee, no one has any information of that superior taste. All right, having information of it is good, but there's a lot betwixt the cup and the lip. It's an old expression, but a lot of distance between the cup and, you know, the mouth. Huh? Betwixt? Okay, exactly. Thank you. He's an old man. You can see by his white hair. You know, the old expressions. there's a lot between jnana and vijnana. So we're talking about these things, and they're all nice. And some of us have been to the school of hard knocks. We realize a few of the things a little bit. But they're all things that we all have to realize in degree. But it's true. I admit it's true. I'm not perfect in it, understanding it. But I know it's true. In my heart of hearts, I know that when I'm free from kam, krodh, lobh, moha, mada, matsari, when I'm free from lust, anger, greed, envy, I know that kind of purity will bring me so much greater happiness beyond compare. So I want that. I want that thing, and I'm prepared to be patient, to be determined and enthusiastic to achieve it, because I've seen in this world, practically speaking, more or less, there's only suffering. You can give it a name and say it's less suffering, therefore it's enjoyable, it's pleasure. But all it is a little less suffering. But I want something that's ever increasing, anandam buddhivardhanam, the ever increasing ocean of pleasure. And that exists, but not on the bodily plane. And it requires a lot of effort, actually. But by the process of sankirtan, chanting, and taking spiritual foodstuffs, and by living a simple life, and by associating sadhu sangha, sarva shastri koi, lava matra sadhu sanghe sarva siddhi hoy. Nice language, Bengali. Just by associating with other devotees and talking about these things, katiyam tascha mam nityam tushyanti cha ramanti cha, by discussing the ideas and probing and understanding with your intelligence and then practicing, you can attain all perfection. Sarva siddhi hoy. Siddhi means perfection. So, Vigata B, one cannot be fearless unless one is fully in Krishna consciousness. A conditioned soul is fearful due to his perverted memory, his forgetfulness of his eternal relationship with Krishna. The Bhagavatam says, Vayam dvitiya bini veshataha syad ishad apetasya viparyayo smritihi. Krishna consciousness is the only basis for fearlessness. Therefore, perfect practice is possible for a person who is Krishna conscious. And since the ultimate goal of yoga practice is to see the Lord within, a Krishna conscious person is already the best of all yogis. The principles of the yoga system mentioned herein are different from those of the so-called yoga societies. Now we really, as devotees, we like all people. And there are many people who are interested in spiritual life, and that's good. And a devotee, sarve sukhino bhavantu, sarve, all, sukhina, happy, bhavantu. Devotee wants to see people become happy. Everybody. He doesn't like to see suffering. Wherever it is. Physical torture or mental torture or spiritual, being lost spiritually. There's all kinds of suffering. And a devotee wants to help in remedying that situation. You can't make the material world really very nice. You can't make the bathroom smell nice. And you can't make the material world smell nice. You know, the bathroom means you finish your business quickly and you come out. You're not meant to stay there. And you're not meant to be here either, because you're all wonderful, beautiful particles of Krishna. You're very, very beautiful. You're eternal. You're wonderful. You're effulgent. And this big blob of chemicals is covering you. And once we get free from that attachment, it's almost like we're attached to the very thing that is the cause of our miseries. So we should just let go of that and along with other spiritual persons, other devotees of the Lord, we should go back to our original constitutional position. But there are people who can distract you because they themselves are not in possession of perfect knowledge. Maybe sincere, but it's very clearly stated here in this chapter at the end of the Dhyana Yoga chapter. And remember, Bhagavad Gita is the ABC of yoga practice. It is very authoritative, and it's meant for us.